Hi, my name's Steve Carroll, and I'm the dev manager for the C++ team at Microsoft. This is our fourth year here at CppCon, doing a video to sort of introduce you to all of the content that's available for CppCon. We wanted to give all of the speakers an opportunity to share with you a little reason for why you should check out their video in the sort of sea of content that gets produced by CppCon. But to get started, I want to have a really quick conversation with John Kalb. He's the committee chair of CppCon to kind of give us an overview for the whole situation. All right, so again this year, I'd like to introduce John. John's our conference chair, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I do freelance training and conferences. I do this conference as well as C++ Now in Aspen in May.
Ah, cool.
And this is a much larger conference, but the other one's very fun too.
That's a great transition.
Yeah.
How large is the conference, John?
Well, we had about 900 attendees last year.
Okay.
And we have about 1,100 this year.
Wow.
So we're pleased. Pleased with the growth. Not only do we have more attendees, but we have a lot more content. So last year we were about 6 tracks with a couple of days we went to 7. This year we're 7 tracks with a couple of days we're still only 6. So
wow.
We've got some more tracks, and then on Friday we kind of expanded. Friday used to be kind of a go home early day so that people could catch planes. One of the things we realized is that people who had far to go were waiting until Saturday morning to fly out. And people who were going home on the West Coast could take a later flight anyway. So we went ahead and just said, we're going to program.
Yeah, let's jam some more C++ in there.
That's right.
Awesome.
That's right.
So what do you think explains the growth?
Well, I don't think it's a surprise. We've been growing at about this rate since the first conference. I think it's just a question of, you know, we've never spent a dime on advertising.
Oh, I see.
It's all organic word-of-mouth growth.
So every year somebody goes home and tells one other person, and then next year that person
Well, what I think a lot of it is they see the videos. Right? There's a link to a video somewhere.
Yeah, it's all.
But certainly, that's what's going on is people have a question and someone says, well, watch this video, here's the answer. And then you watch the video and say, what is this about? And then it's like, oh no, there's 100 more just like this every single year. Maybe I should be part of that.
Yeah, so I don't want to, like, this is going to sound like I'm totally kissing up, so I'm going to go for it. but like last night, I was doing the usual go through the schedule thing and looking like, oh, what do I want to see at this time? And because there are so many tracks, and as I was looking at all of the different talks and reading through their abstracts, first of all, I was like excited, like, oh, I get to talk to that person. But then also I was like, oh my God, how is anybody deciding which ones to see? Like, I don't even, like, even if you're on the ground,
I feel like
you're still going to need the YouTube/channel
absolutely.
9 videos.
In fact, I think the people who want the YouTube videos or the Channel 9 videos the most are the people who attended, because they're the ones that agonized over the schedule and said, okay, I'll see this one, but I'm definitely going to see this one on the video. And so people who don't attend, and they might hear about some good videos, but the people who are here, they've agonized over the schedule. And no, I had someone today just telling me, this isn't fair. There's usually 2, but this time there's 3 or 4 on every slot that I want to attend. And, you know, so.
Yeah. But, so there's tons of content, but it's not just about the talks, right?
Well, I mean, that's why people should be here.
Right. Right?
Because, I mean, we aren't, all of our talks, well, essentially there's some open content things and things like that, but all of the regular program goes out on you know, free video for everyone. The reason to come here is because of the conversations you have that are, you know, the famous hallway track, right? The conversations you have, the people you meet, the contacts you make, dinner and lunch, just the people you're talking to. And that is not, you know, that's not recorded and free in the internet. You have to be here for that. So it's an awful lot of fun, but it's not fun like party fun. It's fun like blow your mind kind of fun.
That's the best kind of fun.
That's exactly right. And so some of it happens, sure, it's in a session and it's captured and that goes on video. But an awful lot of blow your mind is, you know, this guy asked this interesting question in a session. I think I'm going to go up and talk to him. And you chat with him and you find out why, you know, what he was thinking behind that question. And then you realize, I didn't know you could do that with C++. And you know, and so, mind blown. And so that's why you need to be here. Because I'm obviously a big salesman of being here. I'm very proud of the videos and the content, but that's just That's just the opening gambit, right?
Every year, when I, you know, coming here, you know, in my own, you know, job as the C++, you know, leader at Microsoft, I'm always like, I sit in the booth and I go and I talk to these people. And like, the thing that really hit me is something you sort of touched on, but I really want to amplify, which is this like amazing diversity of the different people that we have here. I mean, like, you know, from all sorts of industries, all
That's
sorts
right.
of all over the world, people come here to this. It's great to host in our hometown. It's
right.
great.
Right. Well, you know, a conference, if it's gonna exist, if it's gonna have a character, it needs to have a mission.
Yeah.
And the mission at C++ now is to be the cutting edge library. The mission of CPPCon is to be the platform for mainstream conversations about mainstream C++. And so we really do want everyone here. We've worked really hard to build a bridge to the game developer community. We're working hard to get the financial community. We have a keynote this year with Qt, Lars Noel from Qt, because that's a community that mainstream C++ doesn't talk to enough, and we don't hear, you know, that's Absolutely. A wall instead of a bridge. And the point of this conference is building bridges. And so I'm not nearly happy with what we've done with Qt so far. I think we've got a lot of room with financial. I sit back and strut about how successful we've been reaching the game community. But but it's all about these different communities, because we all have so much in common. And if we're not talking to each other, we're missing out on opportunities. So that's what we're about. CPPCon is the platform for mainstream C++. And by mainstream, we mean inclusively, not, you're only worried about, you know, embedded, so we don't want to talk to you. No, that's part of the party. That's everybody. So, yeah.
Great. Anything else you want to share with folks before we head out?
I hope you enjoy the videos, but I hope you decide to be here next year, because the videos are just scratching the surface of what goes on here, and it's a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks so much, John.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, Carl. So first thing, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Carl, and I'll be speaking on the Monday of CPPCon on high-frequency trading systems and how to squeeze as much of the latency out of those trading systems with C++.
All right, so who is like the ideal audience for your talk? Who should go see this talk?
I would say people working for trading companies, although, of course, they probably know all of these secrets. So possibly then other people, anyone interested in just basically getting some performance out of their systems.
Great. So, like, can you give me one example of a trick?
I could give you many. Being put on the spot. One of the things is actually just look really, really carefully at the way that your systems are tuned. So, not a C++ tip, but if you haven't like set CPU affinity, BIOSes, and things like that, you're dead in the water. From a C++ point of view, inlining is something that you really need to look at a lot. Whether to inline or to not inline, it can make a big difference.
Got it. So my guess is then that actually anybody who's interested in getting more performance out of their application and was like deploying it to real hardware and has some effect on that would then benefit from this. Is that about right?
Yeah, for sure. I mainly talk about low latency, but that is very, very highly correlated, I guess, or coupled with high throughput as well.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Any final thoughts for folks?
I'm going to go through a lot of examples. So it's quite an intense hour. So I might rush it a little bit, but it'll be online.
So this, like, if you're watching on YouTube, this might not be the one to turn the speed up.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, I'd keep the speed.
Got it.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. All right. Thanks, Carl.
Cool.
Look forward to seeing it.
Cool.
Okay, Piotr, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Yes. My name is Piotr Padlewski. I am a master's student on the University of Warsaw in Poland, and I'm currently interning in Visual Studio backend team.
Yeah, I'm impressed that, again, you are more branded than I am today, but that's great. I've got my shirt underneath. We'll go with that. So what's the ideal audience for your talk? Who should watch your talk?
Mm-hmm. I think the ideal audience is someone who would like to know why there is undefined behavior like in the code in the first place, and how compiler uses it to optimize code, and if it happens that you have undefined behavior in the code, how to find it.
Great. Actually, guess I should have asked, what's the name of your talk?
Yes, so the name of the talk is Undefined Behavior is Awesome.
Okay, so people who agree with that statement, amongst others, should be your ideal audience.
Yeah, and even if you don't agree, like you should probably be there, because I like to have a discussion. So.
Right, yes. Especially if you think undefined behavior is not awesome, you can hate watch your video. Got it. Exactly. Okay, so why don't you spoil it just a little? Why don't you give us just one piece of nugget of information about why undefined behavior is awesome that you'll cover?
Mm-hmm. You have those like two sides. Either like you can think about like how slow your code will be without undefined behavior, or you can think about those.
So old, speeding it up.
All of like very weird bugs about like, for example, compiler removing like your whole code because you have undefined behavior and so on. Yeah, so it's like the talk is like half of the having fun of like seeing those weird things happening in the optimizer based on
like
undefined behavior.
Case studies of weird things. Okay.
And the second one and it's also about like why do we need this? Like why the compiler like should do this optimization in order to make the codes faster.
Great. So if this stuff interests you and you want to learn how to make your, you want to either understand why your code is being weird or make it faster, check out Piotr's talk.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Okay, Alan, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Yeah, I'm Alan Deutsch. I'm currently a senior at DigiPen Institute of Technology in Redmond. I've done a couple internships at Microsoft, and I'll be presenting on esoteric data structures and where to find them tomorrow at CPPCon.
Okay, great. So, who's like the ideal audience for your talk? Who should go see it?
Really, like, there's not a developer that I don't think would not get something out of it.
I'm checking the number of knots. Looking for a bug. All right, yes.
Basically, I'm covering some of the interesting solutions that programmers from all sorts of different areas of computing have come up with for their domain problems.
Got it.
And focused specifically on ones that were solved through memory layout and how they organize their data.
That sounds really cool. So like, can you give me an example of like one esoteric data? I don't want you to give all of your secrets away, of course.
Of course.
But if you could give me like one example of like a kind of data structure that you'll be covering in the talk and why someone might want to
One example is Bloom filter.
Okay.
So this one's a bit less esoteric than the others. It's starting to gain more popularity, but a guy named Bloom, thus the name, came up with this.
I thought his name was Filter. Okay, Bloom, fine.
Yeah, and so, his idea was that if you hash values and then instead of keeping the whole value, you just use those hashes to figure out which bits to set, you can represent a large set of data in very little memory. And so there are a whole bunch of other data structures that are derived from this as well. But he basically found a way to build this whole class of data structures called probabilistic data structures, where if you're willing to accept some margin of error in your queries on it, it can save you tons of memory.
Cool. So, like, if you have a low memory application that you, or a low memory demanded application, this would be a great one to take a look at and make sure that you see if you can find an application for.
Yeah, definitely. And it also works as like a first pass for optimizing as well. So, if you want to know, say, for example, if a file is on disk before actually trying to do that file I/O, you can query it through a Bloom filter, and that's going to be much more efficient than doing that disk read.
Cool.
And then you find out if it's likely to be there. And it's probably going to be right, thus the probabilistic data structure.
Got it. All right, so that's Alan's talk. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah.
All right, Guy, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Sure. My name is Guy Somberg. I'm the client lead programmer at Ektra Games, and I've been an audio programmer for 15 years.
Okay, so what's the title of your talk?
It is Game Audio Programming Principles. No, that's the name of my book. Game Audio Programming in C++.
Awesome. All right. So I'm guessing it might be about game audio programming. Who's the ideal audience for this?
The ideal audience is people who want to know how audio works in a game context. So this is people who are not game audio programmers, want to know how it works. People who are, yes. I hope you come.
Yes.
And people who are, people who are sound designers, who are probably not at this conference, but who may be watching online.
Maybe they got lost.
Yes. And basically anybody who's kind of interested in kind of that real-timeness and how that fits into a game context.
Got it. So like, can you give me an example, like the kinds of things I would learn from going to your talk?
Yeah. I'm starting at the very beginning how a speaker works.
Okay.
And I'm building up all the way through like an as-if model of how the entire sound system works in your computer, all the way up through modern conveniences, what a modern audio engine looks like in a video game. I'm going to show the source code for two audio engines.
Okay.
And then I'm going to talk a little bit about what a standard C++ audio library might look like.
That sounds real. You mean like for standardization eventually?
Yes.
Like std colon colon audio?
I hope so.
Wow. All right. I'm sold.
I hope to see you there.
All right. Thanks, Guy. All right, Victor, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Hi, Steve. I'm Victor Sierra. I'm a senior engineer at Cafion and a technical lead on the advanced installer team.
Cool. All right, so what's the topic of your talk?
My talk is entitled Bringing Clang Tidy Magic to Visual Studio C++ Developers.
All right, I love bringing things to Visual Studio developers. So I think from the title I might be able to guess, but who's the ideal audience for your talk?
So Steve, my ideal audience for my talk is Visual C++ developers.
Got it.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about like one thing that somebody will learn going to this talk. What's the main focus?
So it's basically a case study of our experience in the past months in trying to modernize our code base while keeping our release cycle.
Got it. And I think it's actually a tool talk, right? You've produced a new tool.
Exactly.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We actually started with a PowerShell script for running Clang Compile and Clang Tidy on our code base. And we lately developed an extension for Visual Studio to improve the workflow with this tool.
So do you need to be able to build your code base with Clang in order to use this, or is it?
Yes. Yeah, you need to be able to compile at least at the level of syntax with Clang,
But with their compatibility modes, I'm guessing. Most.
Yeah. Microsoft compatibility switches,
Got it. Cool. All right, so anything else you want to share with the folks at home about what they're getting out of your talk?
Yeah, watch the talk if you're interested in doing large scale code refactorings on your code base, and if you're interested in experimenting with Clang while still using Visual Studio IDE.
Cool. And I guess it also, so modernizing your code, isn't it?
Yeah, refactorings, modernizing, running static analysis on your source code, and basically leveraging all the power of Clang Tidy.
Great. So as long as you, if you don't care about quality, don't watch the talk, but otherwise.
Yeah.
All right, great. So please check out Victor's talk.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, Kate, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kate Gregory. I've been programming in C++. My usual line is since before Microsoft had a C++ compiler, which is a very long time, and still am, and stuck with it through in the early part of the century when a lot of people weren't. And these days, I spend most of my time helping other people be better at C++.
That's awesome. So what's the title of your talk this year?
10 core guidelines you need to be using now, something like that.
Okay.
It's got 10 in it.
All right, so it's about the guidelines, and this is the CPP
The C++ core guidelines that were announced 2 years ago and maybe don't have a ton of uptake right now, and I'd like to fix that. I'd like people to start using them.
Okay, great. And so who's the ideal audience for your talk? Like, who should absolutely watch this talk?
Certainly, if you've never heard of them and you dare like guidelines, what's that? You should be there because you'll find out the purpose. And if you've heard of them and gone, yeah, but there's like 500 and they're larger than the standard and I don't think so, then you're a what's in it for me person. Come and find out what's in it for you.
Got it. And I think it's both of our opinion that like there are way too many people currently in the bucket of needing an intro to this.
Absolutely.
Already.
Yes. If you want to come and heckle and say that's not the 10 I would have chosen or whatever, then don't do that. We'll meet for coffee. But
or virtually heckle you in the YouTube comments of the eventual.
Exactly. Never read the comments. Never read the comments. But watch the video.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to spoil just enough of it to make folks want to actually watch your talk. So like what's one of the things?
In Bjarne's keynote this morning, he talked about out values and using a tuple maybe and structured bindings. And I am going to cover that one, and I'm actually going to disagree a hair with it.
So. Oh, okay. So you're gonna stir up some controversy. So there'll be something for that.
The controversy's already there, but I'm going to speak to it. That's for sure.
Okay, great. All right. Anything else you'd like to share about your talk before?
It's really an hour and a half talk trying to get out. So. Hopefully it'll still fit when it's recorded.
Got it. So this is another in a series of talks. And in these interviews, I'm finding a lot of people are like, the thing that you need to know about my talk is not watch it on the double speed mode because it's going to be too jam-packed
already.
I am going
to have to talk real fast to get it all out.
All right. So that's Kate Gregory, and check out her talk.
Thank you.
Billy, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Hi, I'm Billy Baker, and I am a senior staff engineer with Flight Safety International. And I was here talking today.
And what was the title of your talk?
The title of my talk was Almost Unlimited C++ in Kernel Mode Applications.
Okay, great. This is a topic after my own heart. So let me see. Who would be interested in this talk? Let's see if I can guess it.
Embedded programmers.
Okay. People interested in kernel mode, I'm guessing, yeah.
Yes. It's basically trying to present some alternate execution environments where typically in the Windows kernel, you're going to use a smaller subset of C++.
Yes.
In this particular commercial product, you can pretty much use everything.
So is it kind of a case study?
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit of a case study. There's some examples of where the Visual C++ runtime is unusable, meaning it's targeting Windows, it's not targeting this environment, and so we got to go in and maybe provide our own replacements for some of the C runtime functions.
And like, can we ask, what's the environment that we're talking about?
So it's a product from a company called Interval Zero. It's called RTX.
Okay.
And it's a HAL extension for Windows, so you get CPU segregation from the actual Windows
cores.
For
doing more like real-time
stuff.
Okay. Okay, cool. So so the ideal audience is those kind of programmers. So let's give the folks at home something that from your talk, something surprising that will make them want to watch it.
Let's see here. There's death, destruction, mayhem, and panic.
Okay. So far, I'm sold.
Let's see here. We'll look a little bit at threading for a large part, and some of the papers that are in flight at the standard level.
For C++ 20?
These, I think, are more exploratory.
I see.
Basically, that in this particular realm, there are some issues, and can we do something about it at the standards level?
Got it. Which groups are, if people are interested in those sorts of papers?
So for threading, that would be SG1.
SG1.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Anything else you want to share with the folks at home about your talk?
There's as much discussion from the audience as there is presentation from me, so if you have questions, they might be answered.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, Billy.
No problem.
All right, Daniel, can you introduce yourself for the camera, please?
Sure. Hi, Alvin. I'm Daniel Noth. I'm a group program manager at the Visual Studio team.
Ah, okay, cool. So what's the topic of your talk this year?
The topic was covering Visual Studio, but also MSVC, the Microsoft Visual C++ compiler and libraries toolset, and all of that from the C++ developer angle.
That sounds really interesting.
It was very interesting. I had a co-presenter as well. You'll never guess who he was.
That's right. It was me. All right. So anyways, tell us about our talk.
So I'll tell you about our talk, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it went really well. I thought it went really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. People were very happy with what we've done. So we were talking about what's new in the, like I said, in MSVC. So we're talking about conformance. We're talking about compiler diagnostics, C++ core check tool, about the runtime performance of the code that we generate, about build throughput. So a whole bunch of stuff there that
people
got excited. Exactly. It's like, what criteria do you have for choosing your compiler? This is the best one on Windows for targeting Windows. So we went through that, and that was the most interesting part because that was all slides. I just did it on my own.
I was sleeping.
Steve was sleeping. Then I woke him up for the second part, which was all about Visual Studio, and Steve was doing amazing demos over there. So why don't you tell us, what was your favorite demo that you did today?
My favorite demo was definitely the Linux one, because like I continue to find that blows people's minds, even though we've done a few things. And every time we go, we get like a little bit more of a big, broader Linux-targeted thing. So I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I thought that went really well. People clapped at that. I also liked the one you did with Open Folder, where you just went for a MinGW-based source space. So we brought C++ code based on MinGW into Visual Studio without Visual Studio projects, without a compiler in the picture. That was awesome.
Yes. I'm sure it's already trending on some sort of
Social media thing.
Social media thing.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, as well as CMake. What else did you show? You showed a bunch of productivity things.
Yep.
And also the upgrade, we should not forget about that.
Right.
Pain-free upgrade was where people were really sinking in with that, because we showed how easy it is to move to Visual Studio 2017 and all the different hurdles. I don't want to spoil and give it all away. There's like all kinds of hurdles that we've eliminated in that journey. So watch the talk.
Yeah, long talk. No, normal length talk. But yeah, so obviously the audience for our talk is all C++ developers. So if you're watching this, I'm guessing that's you. And so yeah, check it out.
Check it out.
Thank you. All right, Peter, introduce yourself to that camera.
Yeah, hi, my name is Peter Goldsboro. I study computer science at Technical University of Munich in Germany. Right now I'm in Boston doing an internship at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard on MIT campus. And I do machine learning research there, but my real passion is C++, so my talk is going to be about combining those two.
Oh, that's cool. So what's the name of the talk?
The talk is called Tour of Deep Learning with C++.
Okay, so I'm not 1,000% up on all of my machine learning kind of thing. So what specifically is deep learning?
Right, so deep learning is generally just involves neural networks that have many layers. So many layers is not very strictly defined. It's usually more than one or two layers of neurons. Yeah, and that mainly defines it. And it's been very popular in the past few years, mainly because of various increases in hardware, computational allowance, and as well as new algorithms and new ideas. And so it's been hugely successful in various fields like speech synthesis, translation, vision, image recognition, and various other fields. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So who should watch your talk? What's the ideal audience for your talk?
Yeah. Well, so my talk is not as much about the theory or the math. It's really about showing where C++ comes into play with deep learning. And there's actually very, very many different locations, from the low-level hardware to the actual frameworks, which are usually implemented in C++, because they usually have to be very high performance and often distributed across many machines, maybe hundreds of machines. So it's actually very much for people who are interested in HPC, for example, from that community, also from the scientific computing community, but as well as anyone who's interested in machine learning and how it works, which I think is many people, because I'll be talking about it at various levels, from the lowest level to the highest level of actually describing certain machine learning models in abstract.
Yeah. Okay, so I think basically you're going to give people the introduction so they can kind of learn a little bit more about the domain. Yeah. And then in addition, if you're more of a high performance minded person, you can learn a bit from how these things were applied, how this particular type of library is written inside of.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, the field itself is very large, so I can't talk about everything. So my idea is to take one particular machine learning model, and do kind of a case study approach, and go in a microscope at every level and see where the C++ comes into play.
Okay, cool. Can you tell me one surprising thing that people will learn about the, machine learning from your talk?
I think maybe that most of it is actually C++. I don't think people usually consider C++ and machine learning the same term. I think this is probably also one of the first machine learning talks at a major C++ conference that I've seen.
Oh, wow.
So I think this should be interesting for people to see that machine learning really is a C++ problem that they could work on as well.
I can see that because, of course, many of the front, you'll program them in Python whatever, and so not realize that all under the covers it's the good stuff, C++.
Yeah, exactly. All right,
Peter, thank you very much. Yeah. That's awesome.
Sure.
Okay, Matt, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Hi, I'm Matt Godbolt, and I'm going to be doing a presentation at CppCon called Unbolting the Compiler's Lid, What Has My Compiler Done For Me Lately?
Okay, great. And so who's the correct audience for this talk? Who out there in YouTube or Channel 9 land should be checking this out?
So I think pretty much anyone. It's a plenary talk, so no one can get out by pretending they've got to go to someone else's talk, at least if they're here. So I have that in my favor. But I'm trying to aim it for everybody. I'm trying to make sure that there's something for everybody. It's going to be basically the story of Compiler Explorer, as I call it, but Godbolt, as everyone else calls it.
I was going to say, one of the things I'm excited about interviewing you today is that you are the person I'm talking to who had the most chance of becoming a verb.
I'm very fortunate with my last name. It's a very memorable last name, so I'm lucky there. But I want to explain why the site exists, how it came about, a little bit about how it runs, which goes outside of the C++ domain into some of the writing and running a website kind of things.
Sure.
But more importantly, I want to say how amazing compilers are nowadays. And I want people to understand that the amount of engineering effort that goes into the compiler to make it so that we can write code in a literal way for ourselves, that we can understand, humans can understand, and yet somehow efficient, awesome code comes out of the compiler.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, can you spoil one tidbit of something you may learn by?
There are some surprising things compilers can do. That is, I think, probably the best thing for me to say. Particularly, I would say Clang has got some clever tricks up its sleeve that would surprise, I think, even a seasoned veteran of compiler optimizations.
Yeah, I've actually been watching this process it didn't always exist. You were not always there. Yeah. Compiler Explorer was not there. And just watching the way it's actually just changed the way even like I sit right next to the library developers
in
Microsoft, because I have to keep an eye on those guys. They're nothing but trouble. And just watching them tweak just to make sure that the thing works out well in all of the compilers has been a very interesting process to watch the way it's actually changed the way libraries get written. It's
absolutely. I think one thing that C++ is missing is that kind of immediate feedback loop, like a REPL like Python or JavaScript
might have.
And to some extent, although it was originally written as a tool to let you have a look at the assembly output, I see people using it as just an experimental playground for their coding practices. And it's really, really rewarding to hear that people like the library guys are using it in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you really want to get in there and make sure the code that you're writing is going to work at scale.
Right. And you know, you can pick different compilers and make sure the things that are true for one compiler are also true for other compilers. They all differ in different ways, as I'm sure you appreciate very much.
And if perhaps they aren't, we can file some bugs and get those things fixed, right?
Absolutely. And it's surprising now how many bug reports have links to my site now as part of the, well, it works on Clang, or it works on GCC, or it works, you know, on other compilers.
Who gave this guy access to our bug data? Yes, exactly. All right, great, Matt. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm here with Rong. Rong, can you introduce yourself for the camera?
Hi, my name is Rong Lu, and I am a program manager on the Visual C++ team at Microsoft. Being at Microsoft for over 10 years, on the C++ team for over 6 years. And most recently, for the past 6 months, I've been working on this product called Visual Studio Code, and we are enabling the C++ experience in Visual Studio Code.
Great. So what's the name of your talk this year?
So my talk is going to be C++ development with Visual Studio Code, of course.
Great. And so, like, who is the audience for this? Who should actually watch your talk?
For the most part, this is going to be for people who have probably heard of Visual Studio Code, but haven't really used it. So I'm going to start with something really simple to see how quickly you can get things set up in VS Code. And then we're going to move on to something a little bit more complex.
Okay.
So you can get a little bit into how you can use the features to work with your complex projects in VS Code as well. So even if you have used VS Code in the past, you are probably going to find something new. And I'm also demoing the most current bits, which is something that we're shipping this week.
That's good. So it always adds excitement.
It's a lot of new stuff in there. So yeah, definitely there will be something new for everyone.
Great. I actually think the most important reason to watch your talk here online is because, of course, our talks are at the same time.
Yes, I know. You guys are going to have lots of people there stealing all the audience.
Well, or the other way around. We'll see. We should get a bet going.
Yeah.
But the thing I think that's interesting about VS Code is that, especially when you think about the audience for it, is that Visual Studio Code is very cross-platform, right?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Cross-platform. It runs on Windows, Linux, and Mac. It is pretty lightweight. It is meant to be a lightweight and fast code editor. And Visual Studio, on the other hand, is more a full-featured IDE. They are serving different purposes. I think they are going to be, even on Windows, they're going to be good complement tools.
I just didn't want anybody out there to say, oh, Visual Studio, I don't work on Windows or whatever, and so miss out on a chance to see a cool tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think like the audience that, as long as you don't only write C++ with pen and paper, there's probably some benefit to you.
Yeah, absolutely. You can actually, Visual Studio Code, you can use it even for like just a single file, quick edit. Or you can use it for a full project. Either way, it will just work. And also, something interesting just to throw in there as a motivation to watch my video is I'm going to actually do a quick challenge to myself on stage. I'm going to do a 20-minute challenge to write a calculate app, really simple one, on stage from scratch. And people think I'm crazy, but I'm doing it. So you have a chance to watch me making mistakes and screw things up on stage. So
cool. All right. So check out Rong's talk.
Thank you.
Okay, Juan Pedro, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
So I'm Juanpe, and I'm a consultant living in Berlin. And I specialize on interactive software, and I've worked a lot in the music software industry, actually.
Really cool. All right, so tell us the title of your talk.
So my talk is called Postmodern Immutable Data Structures.
Okay, postmodern and immutable.
Yeah.
So who is the ideal audience for this talk? And then I'll ask you what that means.
So actually, I consider this talk being suitable for any kind of C++ developer, actually. So I think it basically tries to push the idea of value semantics to its ultimate consequences and shows how immutable data structures are actually a solution to really make this scale, right? So I think even people that are, like all the code that is shown in the talk, actually it's beginner friendly, but then I think like people, for example, that are interested in algorithms and more advanced topics might find also some interesting things in it.
So
all levels, really.
Yeah, I think so.
So for that purpose, then let's define terms a little bit here. Immutable means doesn't change, but
exactly.
But what do you mean by a postmodern immutable data structure?
Well, I mean the postmodern part is it's more like a joke. I think that there will be a lightning talk about it actually. So,
okay.
But the immutable part, yeah, it's basically data that doesn't change, right? But of course, you can change it, but when you change it, you get a new copy, or what looks and feels like a new copy of the data, but it actually isn't, or not all the data is copied, right? So the idea is to solve the problem of all the amount of copying that you normally need in C++ to really keep previous versions intact, instead, amortize this cost throughout all the updates, kind of.
So in some ways, it's for people who are looking for sort of high performance data structures that can take advantage of the lower bug kind of way of having the immutable things that are not changing as much.
So it's interesting. Like it's in a way, you get better performance actually because of the new architectural patterns that emerge. Even though some operations in itself, like updates, are actually slower, right? But it actually allows you to think in a different way, I would say, about the performance of the application. And for example, latency can become lower, even though throughput in some way will be higher, lower as well. worse, you could say. I will show actually some examples actually of how you will use them in an application. So it will not all be theoretical about data structures and algorithms.
Okay, so a practical talk about these new types of data structures that can be applied in all sorts of different applications and domains.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, my major domain is interactive software and, you know, software that has UIs and that has a lot of concurrency in these operations. But I think that there are lots of other use cases actually in backends and all kinds of server applications, I think. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, thanks, Wanpei.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Yes, I'm Sarah Chips, and I'm co-founder and CEO of JoelBots.
All right, cool. What's your topic for your talk here at CBPCon?
I'm talking about building for the best of us.
Okay.
Yeah, and that means developers that have been doing it for more than 40 years. Just kidding. So I'm talking about building APIs and designing for kids.
Okay, cool. So who's the ideal audience for this, then?
So I think anyone that has tried to explain programming concepts to another person that might not be super technical. I think it could be super hard. And I mean, kids are super smart. I see it all the time. I like to treat them like little adults that like haven't coded before.
That's awesome. It's almost like there's a theme sort of emerging from the CBPCon, which is Bjarne's keynote this morning was about education. We were just talking to somebody else who's going to do a panel on education later in this. It seems to be the topic of the year. So that's really exciting. But let's explain what JoelBots are for folks.
Yeah. So JoelBots are these little guys. I'm wearing one.
Oh, I didn't even know. There she nailed it.
Yeah. I'll turn mine on. So these are our smart friendship bracelets. They use Bluetooth to detect when your friends are nearby, and they light up when your friends are nearby, and they're open source, so you can write firmware for them using C++.
That is super cool.
Yeah, this one is actually coded at our workshop this weekend. One of the kids made a cool game.
That's neat. All right, so this talk will be about, what are you going to talk about in your talk?
So I'm going to talk about, first of all, how hardware works. I think a lot of us, coming from a software background, myself included, it was really neat for me to find out how all the ones and zeros get made and things like that. And I'm also going to talk about how we approached building an API in C++, because C++ is hard, right? Yeah, it's really difficult. And so because of the size of our microprocessor, we can't fit a compiler on there that's going to do like a Ruby or a Python. So thinking about how to design an API that kids can understand and build with using C++ is really interesting.
That sounds really great. So one of the other things that I want people to take away from these from this video is that not only should you watch this cool talk that you're going to give, but also that next year you should totally come. So can you tell people a little bit about the workshop that you're going to be doing also?
Yeah, super excited. So we're doing a workshop called JoelBots Build. It's for all ages, though we're aiming for younger And the workshop is going to introduce people that have never coded before to coding, and we're going to build a game with JoolBot. So we're going to do, you know, Hello World in C++, and then make a really neat game called Catch the Leprechaun.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so this is, I was just telling her before we got started, I have two daughters myself, 8 and 10, and so they're both going to come to this. I'm like super excited about
That's so
the
great.
C++-ness of this.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, anything else you want to share with folks?
That's a great question. I'm not prepared.
That's okay.
anything else I want to share with folks? No, just tune in. It's going to be an interesting talk, and especially for people that, if you know, if you haven't done hardware, if you just played with Arduino a little bit, it's an interesting journey from there to making a consumer product. So
awesome. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Sven, can you introduce yourself to the camera?
Hi, I'm Sven. I'm a software engineer at Facebook in London. I work a lot in C++, like most of the people here probably.
It tends to be a thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I came here to learn a lot about new things and developments and interesting things in C++, and maybe contributing a little bit by telling people about my work, or one thing I did in my work.
All right, so what's the name of your talk?
It's called Folly Function, a non-copyable alternative to STD function.
Okay, so and who is the ideal audience? Who should want to learn about the Folly function?
So I guess people who were bitten by the problems with STD function that we had, namely that it requires everything that you wrap in it to be copyable. So if you have specifically that problem, then check it out, and this is probably what you need.
So let's give them just a little bit about what the problem that you hit was.
So we used STD function, which was added in C++ 11
yep.
together with a ton of other things, and we were using new features, and we were like implementing our own libraries of useful things. And we ended up using standard function in many places to like store a task to execute it later, or to pass a task to a function, and so on.
I see.
But as we noticed later that the tasks that we were passing very often were not copyable objects, so they captured like a unique pointer or something that can't be copied. And then we had a lot of ugly code workarounds to sort of turn it into something copyable, even though it isn't, and it looks a little bit ugly, and it sort of breaks the semantics of what's going on. And basically at some point I was like, I think I know how this is solved. We need something like standard function that is very similar, but it's not copyable and therefore accepts, can wrap things that are not copyable.
I see. So in other words, if you're like considering using std function in your application, or if you're already using std function, this is definitely the talk for you.
Well, I imagine if you're already using it, if you're using it in ways similar to we do, then you would have probably come across the problem once or twice already. And then you might check it out and see if it's something for you.
And Folly is, do you want to explain?
Oh, Folly is an open source library from Facebook. So it's basically a collection of useful things, like things that are missing in the standard library, or maybe are coming in future versions of the standard library, but we don't want to wait that long. So we basically code things up, and if it's like really useful for us and for others, and kind of generic and not Facebook specific, we usually put it in Folly. Which kind of automatically means that people are really serious about the code review internally, because it's open source, right?
Right, of course.
But that in turn also means like if you as an outside Facebook user look into Folly, I would say you find some good code in there.
Got it. Awesome. So is there anything else you want to share about your talk so that people know to go see it?
Yeah, like I say, maybe you've been bitten with the problems, or maybe you're just interested in like the kind of learnings that you make. Because I imagine, I don't know how this really worked, but I imagine that C++ 11 both introduced move semantics and somewhere completely else standard function. And maybe there wasn't enough crosstalk. And maybe sure. standard function is not really move semantics aware, but like the code as it turned out to be after a few years of C++ 11 and everyone likes the new features, just combines
the interaction.
So yeah, if you're interested in sort of like how you come to the conclusion that you have to do something slightly different than the standard, and then everything fits nicely together. And it's a kind of a detailed change. We're not like revolutionizing half the standard library with other things. It's really more or less like one, two
targeted
features of a standard library class that was in the way of what we wanted to do, and then we fixed it. And if that sounds interesting for you,
by all means, drop by and watch Sven's talk. All
absolutely.
Right. Great. Thank you very much, Sven.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay, Patrice, can you introduce yourself to the camera, please?
My name is Patrice Roy. I've been involved with the Standards Committee for 3 years now. I am a teacher. That's what I do for a living. And I give a few talks this year.
Yeah, you've actually got several things going on this year at CPPCon.
It's a big week.
All right, so let's start with the names of your talks.
So today, I had a talk about the C++ abstract machine stating, named what machine am I coding to? Because people have expectations as to what their programs are going to be run on, and they're often wrong.
Yeah, I'll be coy, but I was actually there.
Yeah, you're very sweet. And I have another one tomorrow. That's kind of a follow-up, but not exactly. That's named Designing a Feature That Doesn't Fit, in which case we're going to be discussing one particular feature I'm fighting with right now and fighting for at the same time for some specialized customers that have specialized needs.
You mean a feature for the standard? Is that what?
Absolutely. So something that we're trying to drive through, but the way the needs of the users don't match the way the standard is specified.
I see.
They're trying to introduce something like a stack size, and there's no stack in the abstract machine. So how do we manage the unmanageable, in this case, squirm it through? So it's both a technical talk and something that will inform people as to the politics and the way things work in the committee.
Okay, so then I guess that leads me to my next question, which is like, so for these two different talks, do they have the same audience, and who is that audience? Who should watch this talk?
I thought the one today was going to be a bit dry, but people seem to be laughing and having fun. So there's that. It was for people who are interested in the mapping between what they think about programming and what's actually going on in real life and what guarantees we're providing. The one for the next one would probably interest the same people. It would also, I think, reach those who might want to present something at some point but aren't sure how to do so. And those who really, really want something and are wondering why we're not providing it right away, because it's so evident that everyone needs it.
Should we tell people what the feature that you're trying to get through is?
Spoiler? No, it's not. It's trying to fix some things at the moment when threads are being created. The constructors do not let you do so. You can change things about threads once they have been created, but for such features as stack size, it's not possible to do that after it's been constructed. Now, if you look at the API we're providing, there's nothing to do that right now. But we cannot name that stack.
There's
no such thing in the standard. The abstract machine doesn't care about stacks. So we're trying to both specify what the people want and do it in such a way that we do not damage the actual text of the standard.
Would it be fair to say that it's for people who are very interested in, like, for instance, like sort of more of a theoretical bent about how the standard relates to the abstract machine and those sorts of ideas?
There's that, but there's also the real need of, like, people think it's self-evident. People think everyone should do that. It's just a simple parameter issue or argument you should add to the constructor, but no, there are consequences to that. And when you try to play with the addition of something like that, changing an existing EVI, there's a number of consequences that people don't think about. So we're going to be exploring the design space.
Kind of becoming a better designer.
Yeah. Understanding what the trade-offs are concretely, because once you're opening up a box like that, it's Pandora's box. It's filled with creatures.
C++, filled with creatures. That's good. Yeah. We got a tagline now. And then you're participating in a panel that will also be recorded, right?
Yeah, I have two panels. One I think, which will be recorded tomorrow evening on C++ in academia. So how do we teach programming? Specifically, how do we teach C++? What it involves? There will be others there. There were at least four there. And since I come from Quebec, around Montreal, we have a different educational system there. So I'm going to talk about that a bit and how we make it fit. I also happen to teach both at college and university levels. So there are perspectives different depending on the clientele.
I see.
There's that.
Interesting.
And we have another panel on C++ with the IoT, which converges towards my PhD. So I don't know if this was going to be recorded, but should it be, it's going to be interesting. And even if it's not, if you're there, you're going to enjoy it.
So it sounds like regardless, you must be in one of Patrice's audiences. So yeah,
I have many audiences.
So check out his talks
and
panels. Thank you.